Welcome to Belonging and Beyond podcast for immigrant and refugee women, where we'll be having deep conversations about belonging, spirituality, and healing.
All right. So today my guest is Maitreyi Meliana, and she does healing work. She works with the divine feminine, and she's also, I think you said, a therapist as well, right? If I'm not mistaken. Okay. All right. Is there anything else you want to add to your bio? Just share a little bit about yourself and what it is that you do.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. It's just lovely to be here with you in this way. I think I'm many things, and professionally, I'm a holistic psychotherapist. I'm also a sound healer and musician and a spiritual teacher. And I help women speak their truth and come into their power and find their soul purpose and also connect with the divine feminine. And I have two areas of work. The other is I teach individuals and organizations about sound healing and how to use it for their mind, body, and spirit.
Beautiful. I'm just, as I'm listening to you, I'm getting excited just knowing, you know, how many modalities you use and how it is that you support people with your gifts and skill sets. So wonderful. So as you know, this podcast is also about the immigrant journey, and I, you know, primarily invite immigrants to kind of talk about their immigrant journeys. And I wonder, under what circumstances did you come to the United States?
So I came here with my family when I was 16. My whole family immigrated, largely because of my mother's health. She had really bad asthma in India and struggled with it for years. And, over the years, the doctors told her the air was polluted. So it kind of coincided with a change in my father's career direction. And I think they'd been planning it for many years. I think they were conflicted also, because to leave the homeland is so, it's such an upheaval. Plus they were worried about what it would be like for me and my brother. But I came when I was 16 with them.
And what was it like for you to arrive in a new country?
It was bewildering. It was really bewildering. I didn't want to come. As soon as they told me, I just felt this resistance, because I didn't want to go to a foreign land. And I was really actually 15. I turned 16 right as I arrived. I didn't want to leave my friends and my college. And when I came, it was both exciting as well as strange. I mean, it's nothing can really quite describe going to a new country, because everything is new. And first of all, you look different, and I'm brown, and I had an accent then, and everything about me was different. Just a worldview and perspective is so different. So it was actually really hard at first. There were some things that were really exciting, like the shopping and just the newness of things, and things like television, which we didn't have in India at the time, and you know, those kinds of things and the technology. And yet there were many things I missed about being in India. And it took me a couple of years as a 16-year-old with all my insecurities and, you know, teenage angst to make friends, real friends. But what I fell in love with, you know, is the idea and the real reality of freedom that I could have as a woman. And that to me was amazing. It opened me up to so much, to go to college here, to go to undergraduate college here, to go to a liberal arts college where I could study all these different subjects, which I hadn't even heard about some of them in India. And my mind broadened, and I learned to think for myself, which was not at all a value that women in India were allowed to have. So, you know, there was, it was both hard in one way, but in another way, I think it's really, you know, obviously shaped me and helped me flower as a woman.
Beautiful, beautiful to see the trajectory and the movement, you know, of your arrival in the U.S. and where it took you and where it brought you. And I'm also curious, you know, you were touching a little bit on the subject of patriarchy, and I know it's something you also work with and support women through that journey. Can you just share a little bit about that journey, how you discovered even what patriarchy was, you know, and how it influenced you and how you worked with it?
Honestly, it took me a long time, many, many years. I actually really realized patriarchy and fundamentalism, which is a form of patriarchy, when I was in school, and really maybe about 16 years ago, to become a therapist, that I really sort of started looking at my culture, Indian culture, from a different lens. And although I grew up with all the restrictions that women have, and it was just what life was. It was just, I accepted it. I was in it, so I couldn't be outside it to question it, even though I fought against it. Mm. But once I started questioning, you know, just really looking at my life and evaluating my life and reflecting upon my life, as a woman and as an Indian woman, it was this rude, shuddering awakening to get the degree and the extent of how harmful, violent, and restrictive and oppressive patriarchy is for women. Okay. And though I could see it on myself, on my, you know, as an Indian woman, I also in my work as a therapist, it was just obvious it's to a different degree here in the West. It's still there. It's very pervasive. The degree in India can be much more horrific and stark, but it doesn't mean that it isn't here either. And here too, it can be, depending on the family or the person, it can be. Some people have really horrific experiences. Mm. So it struck me in my work, because I dealt a lot with trauma, and as someone who specialized in trauma, I, you know, both research, studied, and trained myself in different trauma modalities, and worked with many trauma patients. And 70% of women who come into therapy have some kind of trauma. Mm. So it's a large number. So it's not, you know, that it's just what is. These are the numbers of our society today. Mm. So I delved into it both personally and professionally, and realized that, you know, one of the most basic questions is, why is there so much trauma? Why do we, as an educated, progressive society where there's so much freedom available, and, you know, and to me, I really valued what was available to women here because I didn't have that in India, but there's so much here. Why is there so much trauma? What's wrong with this picture? Was really the question I sat with. And I realized through my own experiences that patriarchy, the ideas that, and the concepts, and the very real reality that power over another, and the, you know, not just how does inequality play out, but it's like power over, and to maintain that top-down positioning is so entrenched, you know, in ways that are obvious and in ways that are subtle and in ways that are so in our unconscious. Mm. As men, women, whatever our gender is, that we both on the receiving end and also play it out, both towards ourselves and with others in the world. So I've gotten kind of fierce about this. because I've realized, you know, because so many women have come into my private practice saying, and with these beliefs of, I don't deserve this, whether it's love or you know, what they want to do, or just even the choice to create their own lives, or I'm bad or I'm not worthy. And, you know, the degree of it, it just, it's not right. And after my own journey of knowing what's possible, the freedom, the joy, the love, the beauty that is available to us, why is there so much disparity? So, you know, all the psychotherapy works with the individual. It doesn't really address so much the larger social scheme as a collective. And as a social pattern, patriarchy, I think of it as it invokes fear, guilt, and shame. The three feelings and qualities and beliefs that women most struggle with. And I came to realize that nothing's wrong with a woman. You know, and most women come in like, what's wrong with me? And there's is a very deeply held belief and stance and perspective that colors everything. And they're always trying to, you know, change that somehow. And rather than being encouraged to really flower and bloom and, you know, which we all are, we are flowers. I mean, you're really using those words because we are beings of nature, and we are no less beautiful than the most beautiful flowers and trees and the beauty that we see in nature, and to feel that not just on the outside but on our inside. And that's where I focus. How does a woman feel about herself, and can she express herself and feel that? So I started really playing with this and studying it and deeply thinking about it. And I used psychology helped me, because in psychology there's projection. There's a term projection where, you know, a person takes in what somebody thinks about them, or they put out, or they put on somebody, you know, what their own beliefs are. And I realized that patriarchy is projecting these ideas about women, and women take them on, right? We think we're less than, we think we're not worthy of XYZ, where we think we can't have such and such. But really the work of women is to give back that projection, which is how I worked with women. It's like you give back what you were told, maybe as a child or even social beliefs, but that it's not just about the woman, but it's the larger picture of giving it back to whatever the culture is, you know. And we can get narrow about cultures, but patriarchy is in every culture.
And yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I really feel your passion for this. And it's just kind of like there's just more and more coming out of you as you're speaking and sharing about this topic. And I really appreciate you naming, you know, how patriarchy shows up in women and how women start to feel less than, unworthy, and how you're supporting them in basically unraveling these layers so that they can, what feels to me like they can really tap into their divine nature. And they can really feel who they truly are. It's a really, really precious gift and work that you're offering to women.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I can also say patriarchy existed and still exists in Armenian culture, which also shaped me. And I started, how I discovered patriarchy is by reading books written by Marianne Woodman. And she just opened up my horizons and my world. And I just was soaking in all of that information. And then also, you know, taking on some practices, expressing the feelings that were also buried inside that women were not allowed to express, especially anger, like being the nice girl, the good girl was part of my conditioning. So it was really important to dive in that, in those, you know, into that discomfort and allow myself to just express and be truthful about what's going on for me. So,
yeah, that's beautiful. I love her work. She's just amazing. I mean, if you want to share how it shows up in Armenian culture, I'm sure others other than me would be interested.
Definitely, yes. The way it shows up is, once again, women are submissive. They're necessarily don't have a voice. Man is the head of the household. He has the final word. If there is abuse in the family, women have to tolerate it. Decades ago, divorce wasn't really looked upon as a negative experience. So you don't actually go through the divorce; you have to actually be with the person you married. So, yeah, and women didn't have that many freedoms, I would say. So yeah, that's how it turned out.
Yeah. It's such a journey, isn't it?
It is. Yes. I feel like it's layered kind of work, you know? Mm-hmm. So it just gets to be deeper and deeper. And to me, it's more exciting too, because I'm opening up to something new that I didn't see before.
Right.
And I also feel like women need to, or at least for me, that was the case, to have my own space to tap into the divine feminine and even express the anger towards the masculine, you know, that's patriarchal masculine, not the divine masculine. And then to kind of step back into that arena of relation with the divine masculine, mm-hmm. the divine feminine. So, and to allow that dance to actually happen. Mm-hmm. That's
beautiful. Yes.
Yes.
It's so essential to give voice to all those parts that we've been traditionally told that it's not okay for a woman to have or express. Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I love that you did that.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. So how did you come to spirituality? Like, how did that awakening happen for you?
Well, I think I was awake to it as a child. And in India, it's just, this is the paradox, right? India is so deliciously spiritual. So it's very pervasive there. It's very much a way of life and it's in the air. You can't live in India and not imbibe it. It's in some form or another. Mm. And where I lived, we grew up outside, a large city. So we were out just a little bit out where there is enough nature. And to me, the earth was this exquisite spirituality. I didn't have words for it at the time, but to me, I could commune with trees and rocks and animals. And it just seemed like there was a language that I tuned into and I knew and I could understand, which people around me didn't know. And I didn't understand why they couldn't hear that, but
so you did share it with people and they didn't get it. Was that your experience? Or
right, I mean, yeah. They're like, oh, you're just imagining things. I could literally hear the songs of trees and I was very tuned into the earth that way, and so I didn't speak about it, just as you know, I think children don't speak about many, but I had, I think, a very active life, and I was already engaged in that way. There just wasn't language, for it. And then I studied music. I played the piano as a child, and then when I came here, I studied music, and music was a portal to the divine for me. Mm. It opened up. It took me to realms, and it was very easy for me to travel on sound. And, you know, and in indigenous cultures, music was a way to open up to people's consciousness to the divine. I didn't know any of that. I just knew that when I sat down, I would encounter what I would call then great, great beauty. Mm. And it was beauty with a capital B. It was like coming face to face and experiencing a divinity that was so beautiful that it's so hard, even now it's hard for me to express it. As I encountered that beauty, to know that I was that beauty as well. And it was so sacred and so vast. And I had this, and playing the piano, you have to practice every day, but every day to be immersed in that experience of knowing that I am that divinity. There was an unquestionable knowing that I am. But of course, it was just, again, it was me and other musicians didn't have that experience. So I think I was particularly open in these ways. So I'm giving these two things because they're not overtly spiritual, mm-hmm. right? They're not traditionally what somebody comes to as saying, this is a spiritual experience. But for me, it was. Mm-hmm. And it was without a god or a practice or, you know, what most people associate with spirituality. Mm-hmm. I think an actual spiritual path opened up. I did study an Indian tradition for many years, but I don't speak of it in the same way. It was a wonderful opening into ideas and concepts of the sacred and the divine. And, you know, it gave me an understanding and a sort of a map. But I didn't, and even though I meditated, I didn't have the same experiences that I had with nature and music. Mm. But at some point in my midlife, when I was leaving a marriage, the goddess Kali came to me into my life. When everything was ready to break, she just showed up one day. I felt her presence very powerfully, and she stayed with me, traveled with me for 7 years. Mm. It was a very, very, it was my first encounter with, other than Mother Earth, it was my first encounter with the divine feminine being. Mm. And as one who is very real, one I couldn't see, but I could feel, commune with, and be shown visions and experience her as a dark mother and fierce love. Mm. And she helped me look at truth, helped me find my truth through the maze of the cultural programming that I knew. Like, she helped me find my truth through that. And gave me the strength to really trust myself and not look away at what I might have previously thought, okay, this is culturally ordained, therefore it is good. You know, she was the knife through which to help me pierce through all the conditioning. So that was a very, very powerful experience. And I've had other encounters with divine feminine beings, but I'll just stop there and see if you have any more questions.
Wow, that is so rich and potent. And I really, as you were describing your connection with Kali and your felt experience of her, I could also feel the power with which she was stepping into your life and just basically clearing, you know, your life of what was no longer serving you or even serving love and the divine. So right. It wasn't just about your personal life, but it also was about a bigger sort of perspective.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. Thank you. So what is home for you? What is home for you?
Home is myself.
Mm. Mm.
Home is myself. It's being with myself. It's where I am. I feel like everywhere is home. I don't have a sense that India is home or the US is home. They are home in certain ways. But I am my own home. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. I'm curious, was that sense of you being your own home present with you throughout your whole life, or was there a point at which you did struggle, like, where do I belong, you know, where do I fit in, like, were those challenges present for you?
Oh yes, for sure.
Yeah, okay.
I think I'm home with myself after many, many years decades even of struggle. I haven't come to this place easily, and it's so beautiful to be here. But yeah, I definitely struggle because, you know, culturally I'm from India, right? And that's how I grew up. That's what I knew. But then coming here, it sort of gave me a second home, and I loved both. I really loved both. The things in one that I can't have in the other. And for a long time, I struggled not only in the external things, but also in terms of identity. Who am I as a woman? Who am I, and how do I choose? And it was, to choose between the two was unbearable. It's like I had to rip part of myself off to be in the other. And yet the expectations that were put on me by my family and my own inner expectations of myself, it's like I was very conflicted for many years. And being one meant I had to give up the other. And that felt was living like with one left side of my body. That's how I felt. I was like, I would cut away, I have to cut away my left side to live with the right. And how could I have both? So yeah, I did struggle with that.
Okay. Yeah, I'm imagining many listeners will be, you know, tuning in with those kinds of challenges of where do I fit in? Where do I belong? What is my identity? Who am I? And something that I've also been discovering about the immigrant journey and the fact is that when, you know, people come from another country to the U.S., of course, you know, there's a lot of newness, right? There are many emotions that come up, feelings. There's overwhelm present. People feel sometimes hopeless and helpless. And at the same time, if there are childhood wounds that have not been tapped into or healed, these two get mixed up and it just becomes one big ball of something that people can't quite unravel. And many of them actually fall into depression or they feel, you know, lost and lonely at the same time, because inside of that, they feel like nobody actually is going to get them. Nobody understands that process or that journey. Yeah. So
I think that's so true. I think that's so true. So absolutely. And it's the immigrant experience is a very difficult one, can be. There is so much opportunity and, you know, possibility here. And yet yet initially your foot for a lot of people is back in the homeland. And then there's the sense of aloneness and not fitting in, and how do you belong and who are you in this new land? How do you find this new identity, and how can that be true without abandoning, you know, maybe things that you love and the people that you love? And It's. I think immigrants are forced to sort of create a new identity, and oftentimes there isn't somebody who's gone before them to give them an idea of what that is, right? Mm-hmm. And I think like people like you and I, we come from ancient cultures where there's so much that's handed down, and yet suddenly it's like we're faced with, we have to make a new way here, and I was thrown, you know, how do we do that?
Yeah, absolutely. I totally resonate with that. It becomes a process of deciphering like what still serves me and I want to actually continue with, and what is not aligned with my calling in life, what is not aligned with what I call love and that, mm-hmm. you know, higher dimension of who we are. Because many, many cultures, not just only ancient and traditional ones, hold the light and the shadow. And I think, I believe that when people grow up in one culture, they're kind of like you were saying, they're swimming in it. And we were swimming in our cultures as well. And it wasn't until we arrived into another continent where we were able to see and compare and notice and become aware of what shaped us and how we're still being influenced by these trajectories, right? And so, yeah, it's a challenging journey, and at the same time, it's a rewarding one. That's what I. That's mm-hmm. what I. Sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I'm also curious to hear what touches your heart. What touches your heart?
Love. The many forms of love. And I think the triumph of love. Like many of us have challenging relationships, and what is it like to work through some of that and forgive or try and find kindness? So, you know, I think we are, as humanity, really being faced with the question, I believe, that we're really challenged with at this point in our evolution is, how can we love? My sense is we're being asked to put down our weapons, our differences, and really call in understanding, kindness, spaciousness, room for each other, and not pushing out or putting down, but all of us gathering in the living room together. Mm. And having it be space for all, with no one better than. So I think we're being called to love, to open our hearts, and that touches me.
Mm. Yeah, that touches me too. Yeah, that touches me too. And I'm on board with you, you know, with that felt sense of the vision that you sense and you live with, you know. And so it's, I think if more people join you and I, and people like us, not to put anyone else down, but it's just, yeah, it's like, it's that sense of just attuning to what is love actually saying, you know, and allowing it to guide our lives. Yeah, and creating space for the differences to also be here, right? And the conflicts, and holding them in the container of love. So
right.
Really potent and beautiful. Thank you so much for your sharing, for your time. And if listeners want to get a hold of you, how can they do that? Can you just share a little?
Yeah, they can definitely connect with me at my website, which is maitreyemeliana.com. That's maitreyemeliana.com. And I have my links to social media there, so they're welcome to connect with me. Mm. And thank you so much. It's been just such a joy to have this conversation with you. I don't get to have many conversations about the immigrant experience. And I love that that we have this kind of similarity and resonance about this. So thank you for inviting me.
Mm, my pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you. All right.